We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is KC Sports Network, proudly presented by M-Prize Bank.
Welcome to That Football Show. I am Tucker Franklin with Matt Verderam. Joining me, as always, on this beautiful day. It's a beautiful off-season day in the NFL. Matt, how are you doing? I know that there's a lot of confusion going around with your name. We had a little bit of a conversation beforehand. Verderam, Verderam. I've heard it pronounced so many different ways, so I want you here on this show to set the record straight.
So first of all, my name's a disaster, which is why it's pronounced so many different ways. The real honest-to-God Italian way to pronounce it is Verderame, but nobody's going that route, okay?
Fair.
Including my own family. So I was always told, hey, just Verderam, which is what I go by, which is how I've always gone about my name. That being said, society has not always gone that direction. So and we've had, I've had anything from Verderam, which is fine. I barely ever correct people to do that, to Verderame. But then you get into the, like, then you get like Verdame, which seems like it's just missing a whole lot of letters in the name. I had a football jersey in high school once sent to me that was, it was Verderam. That was hurtful. At least be like Van Damme or something.
Right.
That would have at least been cool. No. But it is Verderam for those who are watching this and looking at my name on the screen and going, I have no idea what to do with that. Most people in high school and college finally just got to the point where they're like, Matt V. And we just, in fact, in college, it's pretty much everybody calls just V. That was what every human being called me in college, including some of my professors. So making it easy.
Matt V is a strong one. Even like if you want to throw like a Maddie in there, like Maddie V, like that's a strong nickname.
I was just going to say that was the other thing everybody called me in college. Nobody called me that in high school, but in college, got a lot of Maddie V.
Matty V is a strong one. It rolls off the tongue. So I appreciate you setting the record straight. I know I think I've gone back and forth on what I've called your first
Everybody is back. And that's why like I am not one of these people who's like offended by it because you can't be offended by it. Other people are probably offended by my name in general. They have a right to be. It's harder on them than it is on me. They're the ones who've got to try to say it. You know, the person I always feel worse for is my wife. I mean, she married into that.
Right.
You know, she had to learn how to sign it and spell it. It's a train wreck. But yes, no, Maddie V, I think, came about because I always played hockey my whole life. And if you play hockey, everybody just has a Y attached to their name. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just how it is. So, yeah, listen, I think it's good because people out there probably see the name. They're like, what? How is that? What is that? So, yes, Verderam. But feel free to butcher it.
There you go. So now we have a reference. Now you have a reference on the record where you can point to people and say, hey, go listen to That Football Show on March 27th. Go to the very beginning of the podcast. I explain it. You can just go there and listen to it. I don't have to explain it again. So that's good. I'm glad we got that on the record. We should just change your alter ego, though. You know how like sometimes you have like alter egos on different podcasts? Well, it's more like in wrestling, right? You have different, you have alter egos different places. You should just be Matty V on this podcast. It should be That Football Show with Matty V and Tucker Franklin.
I think that's strong. I have no problem with that. I have no problem going just about any direction. I've been called so many things in my life, most of which have nothing to do with my last name, that anything to do with my last name is good. That's good. It's better than most of the things I've been called.
Well, there you have it. There's going to be a lot of changes going on in the NFL as well. We are in the midst right now. Today might be the last day, actually, of the NFL owners meetings. They've passed some rules. They've had some discussions. They haven't passed some other rules, too. We'll get into that. But, Matt, the biggest rule that was passed is this is the biggest change I think the NFL has had to the playing in a long time. I don't know if I could tell you another time that they've had this big of a wholesale change just to the kickoff rule, obviously. Thoughts on just the kickoff rule, just off the top, and the changes they decided to make for the whole season. This is a 1-year trial basis. This is not for the foreseeable future. It's just for the 1 year. They talked about maybe passing it for preseason only, but coaches were like, we don't want to waste time on it. So let's just do it for the whole season. Thoughts on this new kickoff rule?
All right. So I'm going to explain this courtesy of Jory Epstein over the Yahoo Sports, who, God bless her, sat down and wrote this whole thing out, because it's the only way to explain it is just reading it. So here's how this works. Okay. And I'm just reading right from Jory's post. So the kicking team still kicks the ball from the 35-yard line, but the coverage team, the players on the coverage team, beyond other than the kicker, will line up at the opponent's 40-yard line.
Yep.
Those players cannot move, and the kicker himself cannot cross midfield until the ball hits the ground or a receiving player receives the ball. And that player has to receive the ball either in the end zone or inside his own 20-yard line. Okay? So the receiving team must have a minimum of 9 players lined up between their own 30 and 35-yard lines, basically how you see now how guys are, you know, up toward the line of scrimmage for a kickoff, with a maximum of 2 returners lined up in what they're calling the landing zone, which is from the goal line to the 20-yard line. Mm-hmm. Any kick that hits in that area, that 20-yard area, must be returned, while any kick that bounces into the end zone from the landing zone must either be returned or down by the receiving team for a touchback to the 20-yard line. Now, any kick short of the landing zone, short of the 20-yard line, gives possession to the receiving team at its own 40. And any kick that hits in the end zone first, that falls into the end zone and is down, the touchback goes to the 30-yard line. Also, any ball that goes out of the end zone that lands in the end zone first also goes to the 30. There are no more fair catches, and there are no onside kicks until the fourth quarter. And a team, if you have to request an onside kick opportunity, and then it looks just like it's looked for years.
Yep.
I hope everybody kept up with that. That's a lot. But essentially what you need to know is the kicker's still kicking from where he normally kicks.
Yep.
And you just have the coverage team lining up at the opponent 40, and the ball has to get at least to the 20-yard line. Otherwise, it's a foul. It goes to the 40, just like if a ball went out of bounds. If the ball lands between the goal line and the 20-yard line, it must be returned. And so if it goes and if it goes and bounces from there into the end zone, it just goes to the 20. If the ball goes through the end zone like a touchback would today, the ball is not going to the 25. It's going to the 30. The bottom line is, the NFL's trying to get the kickoff back into the game.
Right.
I mean, that without having guys run 70 yards like a human missile. Okay, I mean, that's essentially what they're trying to do. I would argue that it'd be a hell of a lot more simple if we just went back to guys running down like a human missile. It's a lot easier to understand, but for player safety, maybe not so much.
Right.
So that's why this is being done the way it is.
I truthfully don't mind the rule all that much. There were some pretty exciting returns in the XFL, and this rule really does incentivize, as you mentioned, no touchbacks. Like if the ball like goes in through the end zone, as you mentioned, in the air, and it just goes through out the back of the end zone, they get it like the 30, right? Is that what it is? Is it 30? The 35?
Yes, 30.
The 30. And now if the ball hits in the landing zone and then goes into the end zone and is downed in the end zone, I believe that it goes to the 20. So it really doesn't it they don't they really don't want teams to take touchbacks. They eliminated the fair catch aspect to it. They want returns. Like, that is the goal. They want to bring returns back in the game. And you're going to kind of see some ramifications, I think, from this rule being passed. You already saw Cordell Patterson literally get signed the day of this rule getting passed. So people are going to make roster changes for it. I think this is going to have roster implications for a lot of teams and how you are going to prioritize the new kickoff rule. And as I mentioned, this is the biggest overhaul of this rule since 1994. Like, you know, they moved the kickoff line from the 35 to the 30, then they eliminated the four-man wedge in 2009. The kickoff line moved back to the 35 and eliminated running starts in 2011 to get fewer returns. Their goal was to get fewer returns. And the touchback line from the 20 to 25, same goal there. Health and safety for their next one in 2018 with the creation of the setup zone, and they eliminated all of the wedge blocks. And in 2019, they eliminated the blindside block for health and safety, and then moved the fair catch line in 2023 to the 2025.
Right.
For fewer returns. So this is a different path that the NFL is taking in terms of what they want to do with the kickoff. I personally want there to be more action on kick. I don't want it to be a ceremonious dead play anymore. I'm excited to see Cordell Patterson back there in a game that, you know, is a one score game that could get a lot different. Could change the momentum of games if you got a good returner back there. And there, I know there's some special teams coordinators that are very big on this. I think this is originated in the XFL and the 2020 XFL, that first gen, yeah. I guess gen two of XFL, not the USFL now, not the revamped XFL, but it started in 2020 on a rules committee that they had there. It seemed to work pretty well for them.
You know what? I honestly, so a couple things. One, the happiest man alive is Dave Tobe.
Absolutely.
Because Dave Tobe has been like, I don't care if the ball is 10 rows deep, we're running it back. So now the Chiefs actually have an excuse to run the ball back. So that's a positive. That's good. I have no problem with it. It's different, and people don't like different.
Absolutely.
People get always freaked out because it's different. I have a feeling we're going to look back in 20 years and go, man, remember when guys used to just run 70 yards like a kamikaze mission? Like, remember? I mean, there's going to be at some point like an NFL Films Presents where they're like guys who were insane, and it's just going to be these like linebackers who all they did was run down and bust up a wedge.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, things change. Things evolve. I don't have a big issue with it. I mean, for people out there who are like, I don't like rules changes, just know that in the 50s, you used to be able to tackle a guy, and as long as that guy's forward momentum wasn't stopped, he could get up and start running again. And then you had to tackle him again and pin him so that the play was dead. And they stopped putting that rule started to go away, and finally did go away later in the 50s, because what was happening was guys would get tackled, and then like three other guys would come in and just drill him to make sure there wasn't any forward progress.
Yeah,
like sometimes you got to change the rules. Okay, for a long time you could grab a guy by the face mask and throw him to the ground. That wasn't a penalty either. Times change. So I don't have an issue with it. I think it's interesting. I think it's at least worth trying. And maybe it doesn't work. Maybe in the NFL, for whatever reason, it doesn't work. But to your point, it was adopted from the XFL, the second iteration of the XFL, which, you know, listen, that's worthwhile. But my biggest takeaway comes from that, which is the NFL should really invest itself in the XFL and the USFL.
Yeah.
And it should use those leagues like a minor league.
Yep.
You know, when baseball wants to try something, they try it out in the Independent League, in the Atlantic League, and they try it out in the minors, and you know, single and double A.
Right.
The NFL should not be worried about competition. This is not the 60s when the American Football League started, okay? And there are 12 teams, and like, you actually might really be able to get a league going. No NFL owner's got to worry about the USFL or the XFL swamping them and taking over. Right? That's not going to happen, okay? They should encourage these leagues and partner with them on some level and say, hey, listen, would you guys, you know, we'd like to have some rule changes tried out in your league. We'd like to maybe have like some kind of a supplemental draft. But because if you do that, like, we will fund a lot of this and we'll help you get a TV deal and stuff. I mean, I think that would, I know as an NFL fan, I'd be way more interested in those other leagues if they did that.
Yeah.
Because then I feel like it gives you a vested interest.
get a little Chiefs minor league team going on. You got the Memphis Showboats got a player that the Chiefs took in the seventh round, getting a lot of play time. Yeah, I'd love to watch me some Memphis Showboats going on. But that wasn't the only rule change that happened. The swivel hip drop tackle was banned. This one was a little bit more controversial with players. I haven't really heard a lot of players come out against the new kickoff rule. A lot of players came out against the swivel hip drop tackle. I think, who was it that made a post about, it was a running back, about they were glad that the hip drop tackle is now banned. I can't remember who it was. I don't think it was Josh Jacobs. It's escaped me. But this is a foul. The technique is to bring a runner to the ground. If he grabs a runner with both hands and wraps him up and unweights himself by swiveling and dropping his hips and or lowering the body, landing on and trapping the runner's legs below the knee. Again, this is going to be another objective call that NFL officials will have to do. It's going to be a 15-yard penalty if it is called. I think here's where I stand, Matt. I think that it's good to eliminate this technique. I think it's going to be hard to enforce it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's going to be very hard to enforce. And here's what the other part of this is, too. I know it's all about player safety, although it's not really all about player safety because we're playing two games on a Wednesday in December.
Correct.
But they like to say, well, you know, it's player safe. Okay, sure it is. Look, my problem with this is it's just going to be replaced by something else.
For sure.
That's what's going to happen. Yeah. I mean, put yourself in a linebacker's position. You're trying to make a tackle. You're coming from like kind of like maybe 8 o'clock on that guy, like a little behind the middle of the side. Well, now you know if you wrap your hands around this guy, it's 15-yard penalty. I'm diving right at that dude's legs. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm doing. And for those who are like, well, it's dirty. No, it's not. There's nothing that says I can't just dive at the guy. Now, you can't do that when you're blocking. It's clipping. You can tackle a guy like that. And if I'm a player and I'm a defender, my job is to get you down. That's my job. And if I can't grab you around the waist, then I am absolutely going to dive at your legs to try to get you to the ground. And I'm going to hope I don't blow your knee out, but I'm going to dive at your legs. And I'm, listen, if you can, maybe you can grab them by the ankle or something like that, trip a guy. But, like, I just think, it was like years ago when they started taking out all these, you can't hit a guy high, you can't hit a guy high. And look, understand, what did that lead to? All these defenders going, all right, well, then I'm going to hit them low, and guys start blowing their knees out. And every player in the league will tell you, I'd rather you hit me high than you hit me in the knee. And I just think a lot of times the NFL doesn't converse with the NFLPA. They're just like, we're going to do this. And you're like, you don't play. Like, you don't play the game. I mean, the NFLPA put out a whole stance on Twitter and other social media platforms about they don't want the hip drop tackle banned. And then the NFL is like, we know better than you. You're not a player. The players are telling you to leave it in the game. So now I think what's going to happen is like, look, if you're a linebacker, you're a safety, you're in a position, you got to make a tackle. I'm diving at that guy. I don't care. If I take him out at the knee, hopefully he's all right. But if he's not, like, I got to do my job. If I can grab him by the back of his jersey, not where it's a horse collar, but like maybe around the numbers, and yank that guy down with 280 pounds of force, I'm doing it. Like, sorry, that's your problem. I mean, I can't grab you by the waist anymore. So I don't love it. I actually think it might lead to more injuries than people think.
Yeah, it very well could. And it's going to be a very tough thing to enforce. It's going to be very subjective. I think Matt Lane said this on he said this on the KC Laboratory, where it's going to be really heavily enforced for like the preseason in the first 3 weeks, and then we're probably going to get used to it, and then it'll even out, and we'll probably get used to the penalties and where it comes down to like that. But that's one of the rules that was hotly contested. You mentioned the NFLPA came out and said like, hey, don't do this, like we don't want you to do that, and they're like, well, we're still going to do it. I do think that was presented by the competition committee. That was not presented by any team. That was a competition committee rule.
Right.
So I believe the competition committee actually voted on it, because I'm not sure how all that works. But I think the competition committee votes on it if they bring it, something like that.
Somehow the players don't vote on it, but yeah.
Yeah. The players don't get a vote at any of this, which is
interesting.
It is interesting. Other rule changes before we hit a break real quick. NFL trade deadline will be a week later. It'll be week 9. This was proposed by the Pittsburgh Steelers. It did get pushed back. Now trade deadline is on election day, Matt. Busy day.
That'll be a really nice, calm day in the United States. You know, your favorite football player gets traded, and you are voting and then probably sitting down, and you're either elated or you think the world's coming to an end that evening. So that'll be good. That'll be a nice little, nice tight Tuesday. Just roll right through. That'd be great.
Yeah. Coaches now get a third challenge, too. Coaches no longer have to win their first two challenges to get a third, but they now they only have to win one of their first two challenges to be awarded a third. And during a play that results in a possession change, if fouls are committed by both teams, any offensive fouls, like unnecessary roughness that were committed before the possession change, will now be enforced. That's a different, and there's some changes to replay as well. They can help out with intentional grounding this year. If they see anything that is clear and obvious visual evidence that the game clock expired before a snap, about time, by the way, could now come in and say, hey, that's not good. But they can objectively correct incorrect calls as well, which is a good thing. That is a good thing to let a guy who is watching the game, who has all those angles, to be able to come in and be like, that call might not be right.
My only quibble with this, and I think you're right, I largely agree. My only quibble is that time clock, you know, like the play clock thing.
Yeah.
How does that work exactly? Like, are we going to be like...
Earpiece?
Yeah, like, so let's say it's a huge play in the game and your quarterback gets that playoff like a half second after, but they let it go and he throws a 20-yard touchdown pass and everybody's going nuts. And then New York's like, hey, listen, what you just saw, you didn't see 5 yards. That's not going to go well. So I would hope that that is enforced in a clear and obvious, like it's well past, like not one of these where it's like boom, boom, where it's like 1, 2, then they snap it. Okay, fine. You know, throw the flag. But I think sometimes we get in trouble when we try to enforce everything by the exact definition.
Yeah.
That's when we have a problem. It's like, I was on the radio last night and somebody asked me, or the host asked me, actually it was our good friend, Carrington Harrison. Asked me, he said, "What if you had one rule change, what would it be?" I said, "For the love of God, change the catch rules. I can't take it anymore." Like, any schoolyard kid knows what a catch is. And then you get to the NFL, and it's like, hey, you've got to have the ball, and you've got to take 3 steps, and you have to have a football move in there. And did you accept the ball into your heart? And did you sing half of the national anthem when you caught that ball? And did you think about your family? You're like, my God, this is the easiest thing in the world. If you have the football in your hand, or in your hands, you have possession of the ball, and your ass is 2 feet on the ground, you have the football.
Yeah.
I don't care if a split second later some safety drills you and you fumble. Then it's a fumble. That's what the sport of football is. I wish they would change that. I know they probably never will,
right,
but they should. But for the most part, I am happy with the rule changes. The play clock thing scares me a little bit, but I otherwise think it's all, you know, pretty obvious, pretty good.
Two other quick ones. Now, the emergency quarterback rule was put into a place last year that had to be a third quarterback on the roster. Now that doesn't have to be a quarterback on the active roster. It can be a practice squad call-up. So, like, Chris Olodikin last year could have been called up every single week an unlimited amount of times to be that third quarterback. That could be a good thing for that too. And now you can place 2 players on the injured reserve during training camp that can return during the season. Previous to this, you could not. Like, you could, if you were placed on the IR in training camp, you were done for the season. So this could be an interesting change to see how teams can kind of manipulate their 53-man roster when it comes time to those cut down days from. They just have one cut down day, right? Like, they went to that last year, where it was like 90 to 53, which is insane, by the way. But I guess it makes sense for all the preseason games. But
yes, it used to be, it went up for like 90 to 75,
yeah,
you know, and then on down. I think make it complete chaos. Just make it a 5-minute window. Just look, you've got it. You know what? We're gonna do it like a deal or no deal. You know, right. Line everybody up and everybody holds a placard. And you're like, all right, 72, 75, 80, 81, 87. And you hire an auctioneer for the day just to get through all the numbers as fast as possible so you get through the window. Listen, you know what? It's not a bad thing to have more flexibility.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a bad thing to have the ability to put a couple guys on IR. I mean, what the hell? You can put a guy on IR in week one and they can come back. So why not have the ability to put a guy on IR, you know, in the middle of August, have the guy come back? I don't see the downside of that. You know, if a guy's recovering faster than you thought, something like that, maybe it helps you keep another player on the roster. I think that's fine. I don't think there's any reason to not do that.
Absolutely. And all, I think that there are some pretty solid rule changes. Look, I know that we've kind of avoided the situation, the Jerry Sneed situation. We got to talk about it. We'll talk about it after the break. I know Chiefs fans are kind of tired of hearing about the Jerry Sneed trade, but I got to get Matt's thoughts on it, compensation, everything like that, where the Chiefs go to next. Coming up right after this.
We appreciate you supporting KC Sports Network by listening to our podcast. You have helped us become the highest-ranked Chiefs podcast network in 2022 and 2023. And don't forget about our daily Substack newsletter, the best written analysis you can find on the Chiefs straight to your inbox every day. KCSN.substack.com.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, welcome back into That Football Show, hanging out with Matty V on the That Football Show. Look, Matt, we got to talk about Jerry Sneed. We got to talk about it. The trade comes down. Okay, I think the timing of this trade announcement tells you everything that you need to know what the Chiefs thought about it. This came down on Friday night at like 10 p.m.
Yeah.
Might have even been later than that, but it was late because once we did the breaking news team where, you know, we got Nate Taylor was on there, Josh Briscoe, Ken Swanson, myself, Craig Stout hopped on for a little bit, Ryan Scott. We had everybody hopping on and giving their opinions about what had gone down with Jerry Sneed, but I think the timing of that tells you everything you need to know about what the Chiefs thought about the deal. I assume I know what your thoughts are on the deal, but what are your thoughts?
I think the return is light. I mean, they traded 7th round picks. They swapped 7th round picks, and they got a 3rd rounder in 2025. Like, I don't think you come out of that and go, that's great. It's great for one of the best corners in football. At the same point, the Titans paid him in a way that no other team was going to pay him.
For sure.
I mean, I could tell you for a fact, talking to people around the league, like that was, I mean, the big holdup in this deal was that the Sneed ask in terms of contract was just way too much. No team was going to give him $22 million a year. Now, the Titans gave him 19, but what the Titans did to make up for that was they basically fully guaranteed 3 years.
Yeah.
And that just, nobody's going to do that. Like, he was not going to get a fully guaranteed third year from anybody. And Rand Carthon, who has been spending money like he's in that show Supermarket Sweep. Remember that from the 90s where guys like, just grab the whole ham, grab 20 of them. Like, Rand Carthon is just, he's been running through the aisles, just like taking his arm, just sweeping off an entire shelf into the cart. That's fine. It's fine. We'll pay it later. Put it on credit. Yeah. The Titans were willing to spend the money on LeJarius Sneed, and the Chiefs were not going to get in his way of getting that payback. Because the Chiefs, to my understanding, were never paying him on an extension, ever. Part of that's because he's 27, and an extension like that would take him into his 30s. Part of it was because they have a lot of good young corners. Part of that is because I think the knee is a legitimate concern. And signing him for 3 fully guaranteed years, I think, scared the hell out of the Chiefs. So all those things combined led to them moving him. Now, for those out there who are like, well, Brett Veach, what is he doing? He's doing what his job is, which is he took the best offer out there. And it was the only offer. Because by the time the Titans signed LeJarius Sneed, they were the only team left in the mix. That was it. The Lions were in on him. The Falcons were in on him. The Colts were really in on him. The Lions and Falcons were out by the beginning of free agency, essentially, and the Colts were out the beginning of last week because the demands for the contract were still too high.
Right.
So the Chiefs took what they could get. If I had to give the trade a grade, I'd say like a C. I mean, I think the return's not great, but you do clear $20 million in cap space. And my understanding of this all is the Chiefs really want to try to extend all three of these guys we've been talking about for a while, Humphrey, Smith, and Bolton. Now, do they get them all done? We'll see. But I was told that's the priority in there, that they want to get those three guys done. They'd like to bring back Mike Dana as well. It's hard to do all that if Sneed's on $20 million worth of a tag. And keep in mind, you can roll the money forward too. So it also might help with Chris Jones's contract, everything else. I mean, there's a lot of mechanisms in play. So I get why the Chiefs did what they did.
That $19.8 million of the franchise tag was fully guaranteed week one, I think. So, like, you can't do anything with that money. That money is on those books. So, like, they had to move him. Right. And as you mentioned, like, that was the only offer that they had to go to the Titans. Sneed's contract is a 4-year, $76.4 million deal, puts him at 19.1 APY, just ahead of Jalen Johnson. It includes $55 million in guaranteed money, $20 million signing bonus, too. So now, whenever this trade goes official, probably today after when you're listening to this podcast, it's probably already official. He'll get that $20 million that he was going to make this year on the tag in his bank account today. It'll be direct deposited. Right into his account. So, like, that's also probably a very good sticking point there for LeJarius. He would have to wait through all of training camp. Who knows if he stays healthy through all OTAs, all preseason, and then get to week one before he would have even gotten to see even a little bit of that money.
Well, you know what was also having a good day is Clark Hunt, because Clark Hunt doesn't have to put $20 million in escrow. So Clark's getting a hold on some of that money. He's feeling good about that after Chris Jones, and yeah, I'm sure. So, Clark's having a rough couple days. Stories coming out about his spending habits are not great.
Yeah, hard for me to feel bad for him, truthfully.
Yeah, honest. He's okay. He might make it.
He's just a guy who has a little bit more money than the rest of us. But so, looking at the Chiefs' cornerback situation now, okay. They lose LeJarius Sneed. I think it's very fair to say, and I don't think I'm going to go out on a pretty sturdy limb right here, Matt, that the Chiefs are a worse football team today than they were Friday morning with the loss of LeJarius Sneed. They've obviously got Trent McDuffie. I mean, that's the guy that probably was a big reason why they didn't want to give LeJarius Sneed a big long contract, was because they have that guy waiting for a contract who would. Like, by the way, he'll be like 24 when he needs a contract extension, which will be a little bit more palatable to give a 3-4 year deal to. If the Chiefs do finally pay a corner, it'll probably be Trent McDuffie just because of his age. But looking in that room right now, like, the oldest guy they got is Nazi Johnson, who's like 26. So that's a young room right now. Also, where they go next? Do you think they address it in free agency? Tre'Davious White was kind of thrown out there a little bit, but he decided to deal with the Rams. It's worth up to $10 million. I don't think the Chiefs are ever really in that price range for an outside free agent. No. Do you think they bring another veteran guy in, or do you think they just go solely draft with this?
I mean, maybe at a really low cost. Like, Stephon Gilmore is out there, but I just don't see the Chiefs paying Stephon Gilmore. I mean, I just don't think that's going to happen. I think they're going to use this money to use it on guys in-house or Dana, who is essentially in-house. I think they'll probably just draft the guy. They've been unbelievable at developing. I think that's probably what they'll do. And they've shown they're not afraid to just put young guys in there and go, all right, here you go. Have fun. I think the one thing to keep in mind is this room, even without L'Jarius Sneed, like, they're still probably top five secondary in the NFL, which is how deep that group is. Like, when you really think about it, they've got an all-pro. They've got two other kids who are good corners. And they got three guys who can all play safety at an above-average level. I mean, that's pretty wild. You've got, I mean, that's without the guy who might have been the best corner in football last year. And it's like, yeah, it's okay. I mean, it stinks losing him. At the same point, the Chiefs Super Bowl odds, they didn't shift. They didn't change. Like, there's a reason for that. So, look, I think they're fine. I think you draft a guy, you know, you develop them. If there's a corner out there that you can get on the cheap, great. But I don't think you're going out and spending some kind of crazy money here. I don't think you're going out. Right. I mean, if you're going to do that, you should have just kept Sneak. So I don't expect them all of a sudden to just spend the wild. Like, I don't think they're giving Gilmore 1 year and $10 million. I don't think it's happening. No. Now, look, if they can get Gilmore for like 1 year and like $5 million or something, sure, maybe. But I expect them to pretty much just kind of sit tight and wait for a deal to come to them or wait for the draft.
Well, here's the thing, too, is when I looked at, like, the free agent list for corners, they're all old. Like, there's no young cornerbacks out there right now who are available because either A, well, I think the youngest one, like, available right now is, like, the youngest name that people would recognize who's available right now is Cam Sutton, and he's wanted by the law. So, like,
yeah, it's not something you're looking to do. Although the Chiefs have signed guys in the past. You're like, what now?
Yeah.
I mean, Damon Arnett was a Chief at one point in time. Okay?
A hot minute. Hot minute.
Dan was literally on the team for about a half hour.
Yeah.
But was on the team. So, yeah, let's hope that the Chiefs don't sign Cam Sutton, but wouldn't be the first time the Chiefs have signed a guy. You're like, wow, really taking a shot there. Okay.
Xavier Howard would be a fun one, too, but again, like, you're getting into the budgetary concern. He's 30. Like, that's kind of crazy that he's already 30. J.C. Jackson is 28. Adoree Jackson's 28. Stephon Gilmore's 33. Micah Hyde's 33. Patrick Peterson, 33. Steven Nelson, he's never coming back. Oh, 31.
No.
But, like, just running down the list, Rocky Asin is probably he's 27, and I'm just like, oh.
He's not good.
Maybe, no.
I just, for the fun of it, just bring in Peterson. The Chiefs and Peterson have been doing a courting dance for about a decade now.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Let's let it happen. Let's make it happen. We're talking about it forever.
He's tethered. But, yeah, there's not.
No, there's nobody.
The free agent market is not great right now when it comes to corners. A guy that I really like, we got to see him at the East-West Shrine Bowl. I think I've talked about him a few times because, like, that's just how high I am. And he just, like, feels like he fits that perfect Brett Veach, Steve Spagnuolo mold. He played safety and corner at the East-West Shrine Bowl. He talks a lot of junk, very physical. Jarius Monroe from Tulane. And if you follow Nate Taylor's Mason-Dixon line theory, I think the only outlier of the Mason-Dixon line theory is Trent McDuffie. With Washington. I think Jalen Watson also went to, like, Washington State, but he's, like, from Florida. So, like, there's a little bit of the Mason-Dixon line in there. He went to Tulane. He went to Nicholls State. So, like, he's below the Mason-Dixon line. It seems like that the Chiefs love to draft corners that are from there that have that versatility. L'Jarius Sneed was a safety corner hybrid in college. He played, and I think that Jarius Monroe, a name to listen for. This is a day three guy, right? This isn't going to be a guy you hear on the first night of the draft. This is a guy that I think that they can find a diamond in the rough with.
I'll give you a guy who I saw at the Senior Bowl, who, to Nate's theory, right around the Mason-Dixon line, born in Maryland. Never heard the Mason-Dixon line theory, but I appreciate Nate bringing that to the forefront. Cam Hart out of Notre Dame. I watched Cam Hart get in the press and just absolutely annihilate people. Over and over and over, to the point I'm like, who the hell is that? Like, this guy, it's like a boxing match at the line of scrimmage. Does it sound familiar, by the way? Do it a certain way that another guy used to play? He's 6'3", 202 pounds, 33-inch arms, went to Notre Dame, and look, so he's probably like a mid-round pick, maybe a late day two, early day three, something like that.
Yeah.
His best game, according to Lance Erline of NFL.com, and I remember watching this game, and he caught my eye in this game, was against Ohio State, where he took on Marvin Harrison Jr. and gave him the business. And I was like, I don't know who that is. That's interesting. Yeah. Like, and for being 6'3 and 202, he ran a 4.5. Like, you had decent enough speed. The guy, physically, to me, is everything the Chiefs would look for, who is just perfectly built. Like, you just want to get a guy that size who can get up on the line of scrimmage and Dave Merritt can just teach him the technique, right? Like, listen, man, you're huge. Get up, just be Breshad Breeland without some of the other stuff that made Breshad Breeland Breshad Breeland. Like, here's the size and the physicality. Whatever I think of a Chiefs corner playing physical, I mean, now I think of Snead against Tyreek Hill in the playoffs, but I think of Breeland against Stephon Diggs in the AFC Championship game years ago, where if you go back and watch that game, the first quarter, I'm pretty sure Breeland got whistled twice for a penalty. Breeland just would basically like, I'll take a penalty every play. I'm going to grab you and throw you to the ground, and then they can't call it every play.
Right.
Cam Hart is the kind of guy that is so big and so strong. He gets his hands on you, it's over. And I trust the Chiefs coaching staff to maybe get some of the footwork right, get the hand placement right. Like, that's the advantage you have if you're a Chiefs fan. You have a coaching staff that,
oh yeah,
you can take those guys. You can take those guys who are Mahomes coming out of college, whose footwork was terrible. And he's like, that's fine. I'll fix his footwork. Look at the way that guy throws the football.
Yeah.
You know, like I would love to see them draft Cam Hart.
I think I've seen some mock drafts with Cam Hart to the Chiefs in the second round.
Interesting. Yeah. Second round, I would be interested if he went that high. But I'm honestly watching that kid. Sign me up, man. I think that kid is going to be a really good player in the right system. If he's got to play all his off coverage, and I think it's a problem.
Yeah.
But if you get him in, like, hey, we're going to play a lot of man, and you're going to be physical as hell, that'll work. And I think that, you know, in the Chiefs system, obviously that's perfect.
I know TJ Tampa is a very big fan of the KCSN or the KC Laboratory. They're a big fan of TJ Tampa. That's like a second round guy. Look, I don't think the Chiefs are going to take a corner in the first round of the draft. I think they got more pressing needs. They've also proven themselves to be able to find some late round talent. I think you can trust Brett Veach in that department. When they draft a corner on day three, you're like, wait, why is this their first corner in the fifth round? And you're like, they got it. They're good. They know what they're doing when it comes to that. But
yeah, sure.
I'm excited for it to see the who they do at. I think it will be a draft edition as well. Speaking of the draft, Matt, before we get out of here, every year we got this player that there's always buzz around. Last year it was Will Levis. This year it is J.J. McCarthy, where teams seem to be letting off the smokiest of smoke screens. They are trying to think that they're trying to say one thing to do the other thing. Do you think the J.J. McCarthy smoke is real?
Yeah, I do. I think he's going to be a top five pick. I do. And look, let's just break this down real quick. So history says if four of these quarterbacks go early, which is going to happen,
yeah,
one of them is going to be great. One of them is going to be pretty good. And two of them are going to suck. That's what history says. Because every year when you have this stuff happen, okay, you had the Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen, everybody, oh, there's going to be five franchise quarterbacks. No, there's not. No, there's not. I promise you there's not. Okay, that's just not the way this stuff works. Very, very rarely do you have a year where there's more than like two quarterbacks that come out and are actually worth talking about. So like if you go back and look, so the 2018 NFL draft, Baker number one, didn't work out. Darnold number three, atrocity. Buffalo took Allen number seven, obviously a great pick.
Yep.
Josh Rosen, number 10 to the Cardinals. Josh Rosen couldn't talk enough crap. How's that going? So, like, Two of them, abject disasters. One of them, decent, Mayfield, although, you know, decent in terms of his play. Like, he didn't get a second deal in Cleveland.
Right.
Allen obviously turned out to be terrific. Now, that's also, of course, a draft where somehow Lamar Jackson went behind the immortal trio of Taven Bryan, Mike Hughes, and Sonny Michel to end the first round. So,
holy cow.
Know that the Jags were like, hey, we've got Blake Bortles, but we're going to pass on Mahomes to take Leonard Fournette, and then we're also going to double down and take Taven Bryan instead of Lamar Jackson. So things were going well in Duval. And then the Patriots, who are going to look for a quarterback, I think, for the next 30 years, were like, we could have Lamar, but we'll take Sonny Michel instead. It's good. We're good. We're all set. So that draft class is set. Then you go to 2019, where it was, okay, everybody agrees top quarterback's Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
And he's been fine. He was the only quarterback taken in the first round that year. I don't think you could say he's a bust. I don't think you could say you really hit on him either.
Right.
And then 2020, of course, you had Burrow, Tua, and Herbert, which that actually, you could be like, all right, well, you hit big on two of those guys. And the third guy's at least, like, solid. Like, he's not great, but he's not a bust. That's the rare year where, like, you didn't have a guy who was a total freaking disaster. I will go out on a limb and say at least two of these guys are bust because history says that they will be.
I think so. I don't see what people see with J.J. McCarthy. Matt, he had the same exact throw that Zach Wilson had at his pro day that he did, where he, like, rolled out a couple times and just threw the ball as far as he could down the field on air. And people were like, that's it.
Also, by the way, but if he said that after the Burrow year, the next year, the top three quarterbacks, all the top three picks as well, Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance.
There you go.
So it was just waiting in the wings. We just had to get the average right with two of them being abject disasters. Now, I will say this. People with quarterbacks get way too into the idea of, like, you see this guy throw from one knee? Like, how many times do you see a quarterback throw from one knee in an NFL game? Yeah. It's all about being able to anticipate windows and understanding concepts. And yes, there is the physical component. Like, you've got to be strong enough, you know, strong arm to get the ball to where it's got to be on time and stuff like that. But, like, so much of quarterback play is mental. And it's being able to understand what you're doing. Mahomes has a rocket launcher for an arm. I would argue that's not even like a top five trait for him. Like, so much of it is being able to manipulate defense with his eyes and understand. I mean, go listen to Super Bowl mic'd up. There's a play in overtime where it's like 3rd and 6, and they're in the huddle. They haven't even seen the defense come out yet. And he's just talking to Rashee Rice, and he's like, get ready, it's coming to you. Like, he just... It was like, I know how they're going to play because I studied a million cut-ups of them on third down, and I know what they're doing, and they're going to be in cover zero, and I'm just going to throw the ball to you because you're on a crossing route. Like, they knew going – they didn't even have to see the formation. He was just like, Rashee, get ready. Ball's coming to you, man. Like, that's what makes great quarterbacks.
Right.
The ability to improvise and make a play. I mean, look, Josh Allen. One of Josh Allen's greatest strengths – is when Josh Allen did the play breaks down, and then you're like, oh my God, what is he going to do? I mean, Mahomes is even more terrifying when the play's not on script.
Right.
And now it's like, anything's possible. He could run for 20 yards. He could throw across his body for an 80-yard touchdown. Like, it's all that stuff is way more important than, like, man, see that guy at his pro day? Like, yeah, I mean, he's throwing his air to a bunch of guys he's played with for 4 years.
Like, yeah.
I'd hope he'd look pretty good.
Well, it's going to be a busy month before the draft kicks off in Detroit. There's going to be a lot going on. Matt, appreciate you, as always, for this episode. That's going to do it for this week. I'm Tucker Franklin. That's that football show here on KC Sports Network. We'll talk to you again next week with more NFL news.